It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
Gas prices at the pump have increased from about $2.20 a year ago to about $3.80 today. On average, that's a national average. A massive increase, the highest gas prices on record in 7 years since the Obama administration. Who is to blame? Alex Epstein is our guest. He founded the Center for Industrial Progress back in 2011. Alex, I know you put up a Twitter thread earlier talking about this very issue. Who and what are to blame for these high gas prices?
I think it's pretty simple. I mean, everyone should know that prices are set by supply and demand. And so what happens when prices go up is either it's a decline of supply relative to demand or an increase in demand relative to supply. And in this case, what everyone is focusing on is, oh, there was an increase in demand after the pandemic lockdown. But it's not an unprecedented level of demand. And if you look at the basic supply of oil and the technology available, it's never been better. So what's actually going on is lack of supply. And what is causing the lack of supply? It's not some inability of the industry. As I mentioned, it's not some lack of supply in the ground, but it's what we've all been seeing for over a decade that's getting worse and worse, which is government restrictions on, and in particular, threats to oil production and oil transportation. I think one thing that's really underrated in this discussion is how much it affects investment that our leading political officials are saying, hey, we're going to make this industry extinct. If you invest in oil, you are going to get harmed. I mean, what do people expect that to do to the supply of oil and therefore the price of gasoline?
We're seeing California with the highest gas prices in the country. Why?
So California is a bunch of specific things. I live in California. We have a specific tax. It can be harder to transport oil here. We don't have the same kind of pipelines. And then there are a bunch of specific, I would regard as irrational, environmental regulations that require specific blends here that make things more expensive. But as you indicated, there's a price rise in general. So unfortunately, there's a general trend in this country, not just with oil, but in electricity, of the country is following California's example, which is not the thing you should be doing. I mean, California has amazing weather, which is why I live here, but it has very unamazing policy with very bad consequences. It's very disappointing that people are following our policies with regard to oil and gasoline. But also, if you look at this Build Back Better, aka Make Everything Worse bill, it seems like the whole country is trying to become California in terms of energy.
In your Twitter thread, which I've printed out and I want to go one by one, you say that skyrocketing oil and gas prices policies are not a failure of the oil industry. They're a total failure of the anti-oil politicians who artificially restricted the supply of oil with massive restrictions and threats to oil production and transport. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, so those are, and that's like the high-level summary, and then in the rest of the thread, there are details. And so I mentioned some of the aspects, but one I'll highlight here is that what you're seeing is there is this blame campaign, and I tweeted about this yesterday as well, by the Biden administration in particular, by anti-oil politicians in general, where you have people like Joe Biden, Gina McCarthy, Jennifer Granholm saying, gosh, we're so concerned about these rising gasoline prices, rising fuel prices. We really need to do something about it. And it must be the industry's fault. They're not ramping up supply quickly enough. Maybe there's a conspiracy. They're actually investigating the industry for a conspiracy. And it's like, no, the obvious thing is you guys have been doing everything you can to restrict the supply, particularly transportation, and you've threatened the industry. So I mentioned the threats, but the restricting transportation is a huge thing, and it applies just as much to natural gas, where we're seeing prices go up, because to maximize the production and lower the cost of something, you need the ability to transport it as widely as possible. The less you can transport oil, then the less profitable it can be, the less it makes sense to invest. So, for example, Canada has all sorts of problems because their oil is largely locked in the country. It's very inefficient for them to transport. And what's happened in the U.S. is for a long time, it's been hard to transport. It's been hard to or impossible to export oil. But in recent years, there's been this huge huge opposition to pipelines in the U.S. So what happens when you oppose all these pipelines? You stop them from getting built. You stop new ones from getting built. And you have this crazy thing where we could be producing far more oil for ourselves in the world, and yet lack of transportation is inhibiting us. And this is also happening in natural gas to the point where several years ago, Massachusetts, you know, which is very near a lot of big gas fields like in Pennsylvania, they were importing their natural gas from Russia to keep warm in the winter.
My wife worked for El Paso Energy 20 years ago, and it was amazing to me because she was on the legal side dealing with environmental compliance and safety compliance to learn how safe pipelines are to transport gas, how much safer they are than any other means by far. It requires a massive investment in infrastructure, but once done, you can't ask for anything safer. And yet, if there is ever an accident, they make it seem the worst thing ever. It's sort of like nuclear power. We are simply not doing what is rational, reasonable, efficient, effective. You put up a post about Senator Elizabeth Warren and her demand on the oil companies, and that comes due today. Explain that, if you would.
Yeah, so it's oil. I mean, oil and gas, you know, usually go together. There are some specifically natural gas companies. So basically, she messaged the top CEOs of companies that produce natural gas, and she said to them, basically, you guys are responsible for prices, and I have a bunch of aggressive questions, and I want to get to the bottom of this. And my basic response initially was, yeah, this is such a crock because you have been doing everything you can to restrict natural gas prices. And I thought, you know what? What should really happen is some CEO should stand up and tell her the truth. But it's not going to happen because they're understandably afraid of her political wrath. So what I decided to do is I wrote her an open letter as an energy expert, but it was my part was only one paragraph. And then I said, hey, the rest of this is what a proud energy producer would write you if they weren't afraid of you. And it was basically, look, you are responsible. We are not responsible. You owe us an apology. And I really think that's true. And in fact, I know you guys are in Houston. I am going to be in Houston tomorrow at the World Petroleum Congress, which has been getting some decent coverage. And this is one thing I'm going to talk about is tell these executives as much as you can, you have to stand up to this. You have to be proud. You cannot let the other side have the moral high ground.
Yeah. Courage in dealing with the left has not been something the large oil companies, corporate oil companies have displayed. The independent guys, on the other hand, a whole different story. The energy secretary is blaming the industry for not keeping up with supply. I've got 30 seconds in this segment. Actually, I'll just ask you that when we come back. Alex Epstein is our guest. He founded the Center for Industrial Progress 10 years ago, and these are the things he writes and speaks on that need to get more of a hearing. What you pay to fill up your truck, every time you fill up your truck, is in large part dependent on policies coming out of Washington, D.C. Now, that's true of most every commodity, but this is a heavily regulated commodity, and it is a commodity that the left has determined the more expensive it is, the more you will seek alternatives to it. They are punishing you like they're your parents.
Guitars, cigars, and a few thoughts from the Czar. The Michael Berry Show.
Founded the Center for Industrial Progress to offer a positive, pro-human alternative to the green movement. Alex, how frustrated do you get that the Exxons and Chevrons and Shells are under attack by Elizabeth Warren in the directive she issued, the demand she made, and yet seem all too willing to cave to these people and continue to fund their craziness out of some sort of hostage situation.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be very interested to see how the companies respond. I think it's possible that some will respond better. There's a continuum of larger and smaller companies, but I think in general, what you're talking about is valid. And I wouldn't put all those companies in the same category. I think the European ones are by far the worst. I think among the big ones, Chevron has been considerably by far the best in its public posture. But in general, no one is really standing up and saying the truth clearly. And you're getting to the point where these companies are saying, oh, we're going to be net zero by 2050. This is actively under consideration by ExxonMobil from reports. I mean, think about this. Their whole product is hydrocarbon. That's what fossil fuels are, hydrogen and carbon. You burn them, it emits CO2. Nobody in the world is going to be net zero who's rich even in 30 years, but let alone these guys. And so they've just totally ceded. They've really ceded the goal that our goal should be to eliminate CO2 emissions at all costs. And what they should be saying is, hey, our goal should be to advance human flourishing around the world. And fossil fuels are crucial to that. And the benefits we get from low-cost, reliable energy for billions of people far outweigh any negatives of it getting 1 or 2 degrees warmer.
Yes, if in fact that's even happening. Alex Epstein, it is always a pleasure, sir. Thank you for being our guest. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you. And people should check out energytalkingpoints.com if they want to learn more about these issues.
Energytalkingpoints.com. Mike, thank you for holding. I was told you had a news update or an item that we should know about. Go ahead, my man.
That's correct, Michael. On Thursday, the remains of a sailor who was killed at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, was returned to his home, which is Winnie, Texas. And his funeral with full military honors will be today at 10:30, 80 years after he died on the USS Oklahoma in Pearl Harbor.
That's happening at 10:30 today?
Yes, sir.
And where is that happening?
At Winnie. Let me get the funeral. Just a second. I have it on my computer. I'll look up. He's going to be at a Fairview Cemetery in Winnie, Fairview. So I'm sure that the color guard will be of the finest order. This is a very special closure for the family, and one of the few remaining unidentified, I would assume. Obviously is a major story. It was covered briefly by the Houston stations and, of course, the Beaumont. Also some Dallas stations. I'm sure it'll be a nationwide thing tonight.
Yeah, Channel 13 reported on it because I saw this. Navy seaman killed in Pearl Harbor attack to be buried in hometown of Winnie.
Right. So.
Oh, my goodness. He was 1 month past his 17th birthday.
Right.
I'm sorry. He joined the Navy just 1 month after his 17th birthday.
Yeah, he quit school and joined the Navy because he thought it was important.
Navy Seaman Second Class Charles L. Saunders.
That's correct.
Is his name.
That's him. So I'm a Vietnam veteran. I know a little about this and about what it means to have your friends and come home and be there for them. And I've been to Pearl Harbor 4 times. I'm one of the lucky ones. But it is an amazing memorial to the day that lives in infamy. It will always be the day that lives in infamy. It's when the United States decided to save the world. And that's what we did. And it took a lot of Americans. It took all of the Americans at home and in the war. My family served in the war. My dad was in the Philippines at the end of the war. So it touched, what happened in those days touched every American, and it still touches every American, because we're still here, we're still free. We came together as a nation, Hispanic, Japanese, Native Americans. We had the Navajo Code Talkers, the Japanese helped in the European theater. Most people don't understand that.
Huh? I'm just reading about Charles Saunders. While his body was recovered, it would take decades before he was identified. He was among the servicemen who were initially buried at the Halawa and Nuuani cemeteries. He would eventually be moved to a permanent burial site at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific, known as the Punch Bowl. 390 members of the USS Oklahoma were buried in 61 caskets in 45 mass grave locations. But his surviving sibling, Anna Bell, wanted to see her brother's body return home so he could be buried next to their parents at Fairview Cemetery in Winnie. According to records, Saunders' father ordered a headstone for him on September 30th, 1964. With the help of Annabelle and DNA analysis, Saunders' remains were finally identified on February 11th, 2021. On Tuesday morning, that's today at 10:30, as Mike noted, family and friends will gather for a graveside service for Saunders, complete with military honors. The sheriff's office, that's our friend Brian Hawthorne, Chambers County. The sheriff's office, who coordinated the final arrangements, said that a procession will occur at 10:30 a.m. from Broussard's Mortuary to Fairview Cemetery for Saunders' burial, which is open to the public. All right, so Mike, thank you for letting us know, good sir. You are wonderful. I'm going to call Hawthorne, and we're going to find out what's going on. We have 1 hour to let folks in the greater Winnie area know, or for that matter, anywhere east of Houston. I guess you could be anywhere else. So we can have folks there to line the procession. Broussard's Mortuary to Fairview Cemetery. And that will start at 10:30. Let me get Hawthorne on the line real quick, and he can give us the details. Let's see here. You ready? It is 281. Sorry, I transposed the numbers there. Okay, you got it? We'll give you the details shortly. Be a nice thing for folks to show up there and give that man a salute. I cannot imagine how proud her sister is going to be that 80 years after he died, such a young man, that 80 years the community still cares enough to show up and show their respect. Looks like 10:30, Broussard's Mortuary, and from there to Fairview Cemetery. Full military honors open to the public. We'll speak to the Chambers County Sheriff, Brian Hawthorne, who is coordinating all of this coming up. Get him?
This is our talk radio.
All I ever wanted to do was fly, leave this world and live in the sky. I left the C-130 out of Fort Worth town. I go up some days, I don't wanna come down. Well, I fly that plane, call the angel flight.
You see, there is good news. There are good things happening out there. It just doesn't lead to evening news. To their credit, ABC News did a wonderful write-up on this story. Navy seaman killed in Pearl Harbor attack. to be brought home and buried in his hometown of Winnie. He joined the Navy just 1 month after his 17th birthday. Charles Saunders is his name. And our friend, the Chambers County Sheriff, Brian Hawthorne, is leading the procession with his department, and they've been making all the arrangements. Sheriff?
How are you?
On behalf of all of us, thank you.
Oh, no, it's my honor. It's my honor and my privilege. And when Congressman Babin's office called me and asked if we would help coordinate it, what honorable elected official would not say, absolutely, we'll do anything we can.
Give us the details. 10:30 this morning at Broussard's Mortuary. Where is that?
So actually, we're at the funeral home mortuary right now. It's in Winnie, and we're doing there's a private family gathering, and he's got families come in from all over the United States. Nieces and aunts, most of them all obviously are great nieces, that have come in as far as Denver, Colorado, and all kinds of places. So there's a pretty good gathering of family at the funeral home now.
And so for our listeners who want to show up and support, where should they gather?
They should go to there's a route, Michael, that when we leave the funeral home here, we're going to kind of wind through Winnie, and we're going to go all the way around all the schools, and they're going to bring all the kids out. And every kid at the East Chambers ISD school will have an American flag in his hand. So they'll go all the way around the school, then through town. Some of the first responders are going to drop in, and we'll go into the Fairview Cemetery. So if somebody was want to come and honor him, the Fairview Cemetery or anywhere on the parade route is the place to be. The parade route, we have a little map of it on our Sheriff's Office Facebook page, and then I think ABC put one up on their page also, I believe.
I guess Ramon must have brought onions today. All right. I'm looking on here. Wow. That's a beautiful thing. Those kids coming out. Oh, man, that's strong. I can't blow up on my screen this route. I can see that they've posted the route, but the lettering is too small and my eyes are too old.
So what I tell everybody is look for Buccaneer and State Highway 124, which would be the Beach Highway 124, and Buccaneer, if they were to pull that up or put that into their GPS, that would put them in the middle of things, and then that they'll see the schools and they'll realize that map. Then they will fully understand it if they go to Buccaneer and State Highway 124.
I'm guessing a lot of your deputies are going to be out directing traffic to keep the procession going, so they can probably just ask, once they get there, they can ask your deputies where they should be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've got about 20 deputies that are directly assigned to this operation, and also the first responders, the Winnie EMS and the fire department are also very involved. Going to try and make this procession work. So if somebody does want to come down and honor him, then they just look for a first responder, and they'll be able to help them identify where would be a good place to honor this sailor that has finally come home.
I don't know if you have the route memorized, but I have a little better view of it now. I found my glasses. You're starting at Broussard Mortuary, and then is that 124 that you're crossing twice?
That is correct.
Okay,
that is correct.
So you're crossing 124. I don't know if that's what direction are you headed there. Is that eastbound?
Yeah, it's kind of an northeastbound. That's correct.
All right, and then
correct. If 124 is you're going to use it as north south, then yes, you're headed east.
Okay, and then you're going to turn right, and there's a public viewing area there. So I'm guessing there'll be a lot of people waiting there. What street is that you're turning onto there?
Well, that is Buccaneer that crosses over, and it goes in between the elementary, well, both elementaries, the very primary with the first, second, and third graders. Then on the left side is the fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. And then it goes down and it makes a left, and that name of that road leaves me right now, but it follows right behind the high school, and then all the high schoolers will be coming out. And it makes a
big loop and then comes back around to 124. So actually, you could be anywhere on 124 would also, if they get anywhere near 124 around the schools, they'll be involved.
And what high school is that?
That is East Chambers, ISD, East Chambers High School, the Buccaneers.
So y'all coordinated that with the principal, superintendent, all that, that they all were participating in this as well?
Yes. In fact, Scott Campbell, the superintendent, was just more than welcome. He's making a history lesson out of this for all 12 grades.
Whew. That's strong. And then you expect to be at the cemetery by what time?
Our intent is to try and be at the cemetery right at 10:30. We're hoping from a time frame, you know, we'd like to pull in about 10:29, but who knows what can happen, obviously. But and then once we get there, so the sheriff's office honor guard is loading him in the hearse here at the mortuary. When we get to the cemetery, then the United States Navy honor guard will be taking him out of the hearse and then doing their honor guard service for him for his rest.
Oh, so people need to be staged and ready by, what, 10 o'clock?
I would say that they should probably work their way and be, if they're wanting to be at the funeral, they should, meaning the actual graveside funeral, they should probably be there by 10:15.
Okay. Chambers County Sheriff Brian Hawthorne, thank you, sir.
The Michael Berry Show. This is The Michael Berry Show.
A tribute to Anthony Fauci.
Sad little man sitting deep in a lie. He's dead in his soul, but he'll keep you alive. Do what he says, not what he do. Cause the truth is for him and the lie is for you. Sad little man, but he's treated like a god. As the faithless prayer to a fake and a fraud. Worship the man, pledge to his word. One shot, two shot, now you get a third. Sad little man, you better run now while you know you can. Sad little man, you don't fool me, you sad little man. Sad little man, gonna trap you like a dog. Put your head in a net while they eat you raw. Don't ask why, just comply. Cause fear is the drug that the doc prescribed. Sad little man, you can watch him on the news, preaching to his choir while they learn the rules. Some feel safe and some feel healed, but they'll all hold his hand as he makes the kill. Sad little man, sad little man, you better run now. Your kids, some might live while the rest get sick. So put them to the test and listen for the yell. When the truth comes out, he's gonna burn in hell. Sad little man, you better run now while you know you can. Sad little man, you don't fool me, you sad little man. You can't fool me.
Wow. Wow. You can't look at the individual news stories out there as standalone news stories. They're part of a cultural shift. George Floyd was not a hero. He was a violent convicted felon who moved to Minnesota to escape Texas, where the cops knew who he was. He was a prison inmate, violent criminal, who was in Minnesota committing another crime when officers responded to arrest him for committing that crime. He had an overdose of the drugs that he had overdosed on a month before and almost died. So many lies were told, just as with Rittenhouse. But so many people didn't want to push back because we all had to show that, hey, I'm conservative. I'm not a supporter of Al Sharpton, but man, I'll jump up and tell you that officer ought to hang. Well, no, he shouldn't. George Floyd was saying, I can't breathe, before they ever put him on the ground. You know why he couldn't breathe? Because of the drugs in his system that he overdosed on the month before. Why is this not reported? All these things that never get reported. And that was the narrative to take Trump down. Trump can't handle COVID. Cops are bad. Black people are being murdered. The sad thing is there are people who actually end up believing this. They don't realize it's a game. My wife said to me the other day, she said something to the effect of, Beth on Yellowstone causes all her own problems. Why can't she ever get along with Jamie, her brother? I said, sweetheart, you understand it's a TV show, right? I know. I just don't understand why she can't get along with him. Because if she got along with him, it would be boring. The deep psychological effects of the action he took as part of his personality that caused her grief for the rest of her life is the construct. They wrote this. They scripted it to create the conflict. It's not naturally occurring. That woman's not really Beth Dutton, and he's not really Jamie Dutton, and they don't live on the Yellowstone Ranch in Montana. It was created to draw in your emotions. And when you understand that the George Floyd incident was created to draw in your emotions, then it all makes sense. But some people don't understand that. And after that, there was the defund police movement. And many cities literally did defund many of their positions. Minneapolis, the city where all this happened. Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Chicago. In Houston, Sylvester Turner spoke at the George Floyd Memorial because, you know, we had to have three memorials for this hero before we painted his mural on the walls and built monuments to him as we're tearing down monuments to Thomas Jefferson. This is happening in this country. This is real. This is who these people are. Well, fast forward. You defunded the police. Criminal justice reform, Soros-backed, meant that the Kim Ogg and the likes and the Democrat judges who swept into power in Harris County, now bad guys get arrested by the few cops left who are allowed to do something, and they're putting them back out on the streets. Sylvester Turner spoke at the George Floyd Memorial, and at that memorial said, I have instructed my city attorney right now to give the deal to my former law partner. No, I have instructed the city attorney right now. He is preparing for me to sign when I return. Documents limiting the power of our police officers to arrest bad guys. And you wonder why a city bus driver was yanked out of a bus and beaten by a mob of Utes, as Joe Pesci would say. News report, Fox 32 Chicago.
This driver was 49 years old. He was hit, dragged, punched. This all happened right in the middle of Michigan Avenue near Washington, 9 p.m. Saturday night. The driver was inspecting the bus because he heard a loud noise, and that is when he was attacked. He was hospitalized with bruises to his face and body. Police say large groups of teens gathered in Millennium Park, forcing it to close early. The union president says more flash mobs will pop up over the school winter break, since students are out.
This is something that happens far too often to us, you know, and it is no sense of urgency to protect us as we do a job that we love to do, which is Moody City. It's shunned on, it's falling on deaf ears, and it's one too many incidents, and something must be done about it. Yeah. At this time. The most important thing, we need a police presence. We need stiffer penalties. You know, you could ban a person from going into a store or a sports event, but we can't ban nobody from taking public transportation, no matter how many times they assault us. And they have no fear. If you look back at this year alone, we've had a drive in that same location, September, we had a driver shot. So at what point do we say enough is enough?
So I guess this isn't Donald Trump's fault, huh?